woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. Oh.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Well, what about Stacks and Jacks? I'm telling you, we have Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures down 2, NASDAQ futures up 18. We got a mixed morning. We got another set of producer price numbers, but price numbers coming out this morning. Yesterday the numbers were pretty much horrible. Market was way down and came back to pretty much unchanged on the close. Not sure where that came from, but it came from someplace. I think anybody who thinks the Fed's cutting rates Powell says we're not quite there yet. So there you go. I don't think we're anywhere near there. As a matter of fact, I think they're inflating the place, but that would just be me. Do we have Professor Lou?
Good morning, sir.
So, Lou, the guys on the other side of the aisle in court took one look at you and caved, from what I hear.
No, we reached a rational end to this little dispute I was involved in. So, you 95%, 96% of the litigation settles before it actually gets to trial. This just happened to settle on the courthouse steps, so. That happens.
I was picked for a jury once, and before we wandered in the next day, it was settled.
Well, and they probably took a look at you, and one side took a look at you and said, "No way," or both sides took a look at you and said, "No way, do we want to put this case in front of Tom?"
In front of this guy.
I can understand that. all right, what do you think of that big guy over there on the left? I have absolutely no idea. He looks like a wild card. Yeah, we think he is too. Let's settle.
Actually, was that? I actually did go through.
Listen, that is not an unreasonable supposition. That happens.
Well, why'd they pick me if they didn't want me?
Sometimes they don't have a choice.
I was on a case.
You get depending on where you are in a state or federal court. And what the court's local practices are, you get a certain number of what are called peremptory challenges that allow you to challenge jurors without having to give a reason. You just say, you try to challenge people you don't want on the jury for whatever reason, and there you can go as scientifically or as non-objectively as you like, but you can challenge people for cause, and if you don't like a jury, you try to come up with a cause reason. I saw some reaction. I didn't like the answer to this question that we asked them, etc. They have a connection, to one of the parties. But if the court doesn't let you challenge them for cause, and the judges are very, they're very strict on that, then you have to use what are called peremptory challenges, and you only have a limited number of those. And once those are gone, it's like six or something. And once those are gone, you have to. If you can't figure out a way to challenge somebody for cause, you're stuck with the juror.
Well, I was on two. One I was picking, and the two guys were very, very serious about picking people. And it struck me that they tried to ask you questions where you essentially disqualified yourself. Where the judges say, "Go." If they said, "Do you think you can be partial in this case since your brother had the same situation or something like that?" If you said, "No, I don't," then the judges tell you to go. At least the one I was in. But then the next time I went, and that actually went to a trial, the next one I was on, the guys were like nowhere near as serious about it. It was almost like they didn't even really care. I'm thinking, wow, there's a big change in tone here. And then the next morning when they said it's settled, I guess it was already close to being settled while they were picking the jury. So they must have known we were going to settle it. I didn't say they didn't care, but they were nowhere near as meticulous as the first time.
Yeah, it varies. I've found generally, if you want to get yourself disqualified for a jury, show up to court wearing a suit. I've done that when I was called for jury duty. I've done that every time I've been called for jury duty. And when I get asked, you know, juror number 15, you know, why are you in a suit? I say, I always wear a suit when I come to court, which is true.
You know, and then they tell me you're an attorney, then you're out.
Oh, no, they know I'm a lawyer already. Okay. But when you put that out there, and of course it works, it also works as a factor on the other jurors, and so the attorneys, I mean it creates all kinds of mental, you know, uncertainty in the, as if there's any other kind, it creates all kinds of uncertainty in the minds of the attorneys, because, you know, one side is going, is this guy in a suit because he wants to set him up as himself up as like the foreman, you know, the power broker in that jury room? Is he that kind of guy? And then the other side's thinking, is he trying to do that to intimidate the other jurors? You know, so they know he's a lawyer? What are we doing here?
Wow.
And so it, each side looks at you as a wild card when you do that. But it's a perfectly, you know, it's sort of the functional equivalent of wearing the t-shirt, you know, with a picture of I don't know, Che Guevara or something on it to court. You know, you the attorneys look at it and go, I'm not really sure what this guy's doing, and I'm not sure I like it. Now, the last one of those cases where I was called for a jury duty in Chicago, I showed up in a suit, and the judge actually was quite pleased. And he just said, he asked me, do you have a court appearance? I said, no, I this is my court appearance. This is the way I come to court, Your Honor. And you know, I'm not trying to be disrespectful. The judge thought that was kind of neat. I was on track to be a juror, and then the guys were sort of asking questions about stuff, and then finally one of them said, okay, this is a case about a very bad dog attack, and he looked at me and said, do you have any experience with this? I know you're an employment lawyer. You told us you're an employment lawyer. And I said, I have to tell you that I do. I was involved in two dog bite cases when I was a military attorney. One in a base housing situation where somebody's pet bit somebody else, and the Air Force got sued because the dog had bitten somebody once before and was still allowed on base. And the other, when somebody tried to pet a military working dog, which was just the stupidest thing ever. But I mean, both sides instantly moved to take me off the jury for cause.
Oh God!
Yeah. Well, but
I was on a jury with me. Remember the political? He still comes on out of retirement for like elections and stuff. Remember the political guy was here forever, Mike Flannery.
Yes.
He was on the jury with the very young Mike Flannery, and was a young chief. He was on the jury with me. The judge took one look at him and said, "All right, you're out of here."
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and sometimes it's like I said, it's an instantaneous disqualification if you know something about the case. But I, like I said, it's happened to me like three times, and I've when I show up in a suit, it instantly confounds the attorneys on both sides. Usually, they look and go, "What is this guy doing?" So,
what if he would have said, "Sir, I thought you said your dog does not bite," and you said, "Sir, it is not my dog." Remember that? Remember that scene?
Yes.
You said your dog didn't bite. It's not my dog.
That's right. Yeah, not my dog. Yeah. God. Yeah. That was the last time I got called. I assume I'll be called eventually here in Denver, and I could test my theory here.
I wonder how come people get called like to different places. I got called twice to the Civic Center. Then I was out in Hanover Heights for them somehow. And the last time I got called like to Markham, and I said, I'm not going. So I told them, I said, can I get out of this? And they said, okay. But a guy here in the office always ends up at 26th Street, and he's always on like some murder
trial. Yeah, down
in
the criminal courts. Well, you know, that's one of the things that, if you're not in that system or looking around that system a lot, you don't realize how widespread Cook County and how just sprawling it is, and that they've got these courts all over the place.
It's the biggest county in the country by far.
Yeah, yeah. And
I think, is there five courts? Five or six?
I can't remember now.
Well, there's Markham. There's a place out west, Maywood. There's Rolling Meadows. There's Bridgeview, and there's downtown. Maybe there must be five.
Yeah, I think five sounds right. But yeah, and you know, you always think of the Cook County Courthouse from the Blues Brothers, but they're all over, and you know the criminal court in California, I always just down on California Avenue, I just thought was put down there so that it was just a, you know, you didn't have to use the criminals didn't have to use mass transit to get to the courthouse.
Well, if you have a case out in Rolling Meadows, which euphemistically is called Rolling Ghettos, the reason why they call it that is because anybody who's caught for a crime out there, you're in county jail, so you're 26th in California. So every time you're arraigned in court, they need to take you on a bus, essentially out to Arlington Heights.
Yeah.
Then you get right on the bus and go. I mean, it's got to be an hour and a half trip on a bus.
Yeah, that's a drive.
Yeah, and it's all the people, for those listeners, I mean, all these satellite golf courthouses that Blue and I are talking about, there's only one jail. It's county. It's not like there's a jail in Maywood. So everybody has to come from county to the various spots where they're being tried. It's so weird.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I had an appearance at the courthouse in Maywood, and I'm trying to remember what it was for, but I can't. But I remember pulling up there and going, I didn't, you know. I mean,
maybe you were caught speeding in Maywood.
Oh, it was something else. I can't remember. I had a case where, you know, one of my kids got swept up at some party, and I had to show up at the courthouse for that. But that was not Cook County. That was one of the suburban courthouses.
Actually, I have a very serious question for you from one of our listeners, one of our solid listeners. He asked me, and I said, "What are you asking me for?" Let's ask Lou. Who is there a anointed successor for Putin?
No, not yet.
Is there a group of two or three you could name that'll fight it out, or what?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. I'm not sure I have seen anybody that looks like he's in the running. There is a gaggle of people around him, but I think if he dies, I think you're going to see a very Russian kind of succession problem. I mean, there'll be a fight to get in the position for the election, but I can't remember if Medvedev is still the president or not, but or was his number two for a while. I don't know who it is. He's been pretty careful to avoid having a strong person around him. And I don't have a name. It's, you know, if
does he hold every title?
Pardon me?
Does he hold every title, or what is
it? I think he, now that I'm thinking about it, I think he does. But I'm you know, the way this typically works is it's a family. It's some family member. But I think it's his daughter who's just popped up in the news lately. And I'm just wondering if you know, maybe it's a family member. I don't have an answer to that. That's a good question. I should look that up.
The rumors from Core in those places where you don't know if they're right or wrong, you have him doing almost the Hitler thing where he's on like 10 drugs a day or something. Is that, do you have any idea if that's confirmed or not?
I would not believe that. I mean they've been saying that for over a decade.
Yeah, he's not playing hockey anymore or anything that I don't see.
No, he's not riding bears across streams and bare chested, you know.
Yeah, that kind of
you
thing.
You see that great picture. And you know, I've heard that story's been out there for ages. I'm wondering though, you know, if age is mellowing him a little bit. I was fascinated to see Trump's tweet yesterday where he talked about, you know, picking the phone up and calling him and just saying, "Hey, calling Putin, and they have this conversation, and you know, again, Trump's transactional, and so he said, "Look, this is ridiculous. You're killing, you know, you're killing 1,000 people a week on your side, and you're probably getting equally terrible losses on the Ukrainian side. This has got to stop. It's bad, you know. Trump is one of these guys. War is bad for business, at least the kind of business he wants to run. And so, I thought that was fascinating. And maybe Putin says to himself, this guy's got a point."
Well, he's probably known he's had a point for a long time. The question is, how does he get out of there to save face?
Their face saving is a long term face saving. You know, he doesn't have the media, you know, hammering him for 5 minutes and then jumping on to the next thing. They're taking a long view there in Russia. So I'm sure from his perspective, he can say, okay, we're going to slow down here, and we'll freeze everything in place right now. I've got, you know, 25% of the country this time from my invasion in 22, and I got another 30 per 10% of the country in 2014. So you know, we'll hold on to that, and then in another 10 years, when Europe has gotten soft and fat on our gas and is afraid of us, and the United States pulls away, then we'll go again. I honestly think that's the way they're looking at it, and that's one of the reasons why. I mean, I think we're seeing at least a quasi intelligent or quasi managed foreign policy move in Europe. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Hegseth's comments yesterday were so upsetting to a number of the people in the EU, because he basically told them, look, you count on our security blanket and our security shield, and we're not going to do this anymore. You have to start picking up your own expenses, and
which they have, by the way.
No, they haven't.
Sure, they have.
No, they haven't.
To a large extent, they have.
No, they haven't, Tom. Go look at the expenses. It's crazy. You know, do you know how many combat divisions Germany can field, or Britain? You know, France is trying to pull its own weight, but France has finally gotten up above the 2% number. But to have the Russians have the largest land war in Europe since World War II breaking out on your doorstep, and not to jack up your defense spending immediately is nuts.
Stuff I've read, an awful lot of people in the last 12 years have gotten up to the 2% over there.
Nope. The major players are still, you know.
But I mean, the constant gibberish from this administration regarding, it's not what people say, Louis, what people hear. You and I know, and I think our listeners know, that the 2% is a 2% of GDP. People here think that somehow they owe us money. No, they don't. They don't owe.
No.
But I think what you're not missing, because you know better than I do, for decades, we didn't want them to do that because we wanted to be in charge. We didn't want Germany to have 15 or 20 divisions. We didn't want Japan to do. Now we're saying, gee, what's the problem? Japan isn't paying for their own defense. Lou, for since 1945, we didn't want them to. We wanted to be the big dog in the forest, right? Didn't we? We never bitched that Germany didn't have some massive army.
We wanted them to get their weapons production up so that they could and have enough divisions so that they could stop the Russians coming across the border long enough for us to get our land bridge and air bridge, or a sea bridge and air bridges established. But they're not there. And the 2% spending, you got to remember, the 2% spending is not just a flat number. It's 2% with a certain percentage spent on equipment rather than just personnel. And nobody, very few countries over there are hitting that goal. Now, having said that, The Germans have ramped up artillery and defense systems production. The Brits are trying, but you're talking about a very long-term ramp up for both of those countries, and they're just not, they're not able to field effective fighting forces right now.
Well, you know, I don't know how you have the, I think a couple of people can build submarines, but I don't think the British have the capability tomorrow of building four aircraft carriers, or don't order they want to. I'm not so sure we should have. We only have 10, and I'm not so sure they should be so concentrated in the ones we have. I think we should have 20.
I'm not talking about aircraft carriers. I'm talking about drones and 155 millimeter artillery shells and armored fighting vehicles and all the rest. Submarines. You know, submarines, and I will credit the Germans and the French for especially the Germans, for technology that is really interesting and that has effectively negated the nuclear advantage that we had and that Russia had with their non-air breathing, you know, diesel systems that contain their own oxygen. Those boats can stay submerged, and they are very quiet.
Diesels were always quieter, weren't they?
Diesel electrics are very noisy.
When they switched to electric, they were very quiet.
They switched to electric; they're very quiet. But you know, the batteries don't last forever, and are nearly as long as like a nuke.
Plus, everybody stinks in there.
The new boats now can run without having to snorkel, without having to put that tube up and run the diesel motor or those loud diesel engines on the surface. They can run because they carry their own oxygen, and so they can run a combustion system inside the boat.
For how long?
Long enough to be combat effective.
I mean, they're not in the Pacific like ours. I mean, they're just around their place. But
they're coastal. You know, defense stuff. China's got some, and I know Indonesia and Australia have some, and so.
Well, who's building wasn't there a big fight over who was going to build?
Yeah,
the latest subs for, was it Japan or Australia? Who ended up getting that contract?
We basically forced Australia into getting some nuclear boats. I think the French were the competitors, and it was not an intelligent move. Australia's defense budget is not big enough to handle a bunch of nuclear submarine purchases, so I don't know what the status of that is right now, but again, to go back to our point, the reason that Hegseth is upsetting these folks is because he's saying, look, you guys have to shoulder more of the burden. You have an aggressor engaged in combat operations against a neighbor on your border. You have to pick the pieces up here and figure this out, and among those, and that they want it to be coordinated. So it's not just defense spending. It's, you got to turn your gas spigots off. You've got to stop buying electricity from Russia. You've got to really start acting like these guys are coming for you, because they are.
How much?
We'll see if that works.
How much is? Of course, nobody nobody on this show except maybe me. We give the Biden group any kudos whatsoever, but it seems to me that with the serious situation and Russia getting it kicked out of there, and Iran kind of getting kicked out of just about everywhere, with Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis getting their ass kicked, how much has the Russian sphere, the Russian / Iran sphere, been weakened in the last year and a half?
It's been weakened in the Middle East significantly, but the Iranians are coming back, and to the extent that the Israelis have not destroyed Hezbollah, the Iranians are still funneling money and trying to funnel weapons to them.
How serious or how key is it to figure out where this guy in Syria lands? It seems to me that's a real wild card. If he sort of ends up is even somebody who can live with the West, that takes a lot of the heat out of Iran, I would think.
Okay, so
the upper word there being if
we've been talking about Arab moderates since the 70s.
Yeah, I know.
And they're not there. These guys, I mean, I'd love to think that this guy was you know a relatively modern Islamic fundamentalist, but you can't count on that. These people, as I said, the main difference between this guy's vision of Islam and ISIS's vision of Islam is that these guys are we're allowed to play soccer.
Yeah.
Well, there's not very much separation.
Well, the reason why I asked is it's been months now since the dude took, this is, you know, kind of an interesting, I won't say pet peeve of mine, but since I can't get Al Jazeera US, these people, a lot of these things, Lou, if I didn't have you, I don't know what I'd do. They just drop off the table. The guy took control, seemingly control. Where are we? We're February. Was it like September? All of a sudden, I can't find boo about the guy. That's why I'm asking you. What are they doing?
Well, he talked to Vladimir Putin yesterday. So they announced a phone call. So Putin, I'm sure, is talking to him about, you know, reestablishing Russian bases in Syria. I'm sure of that.
Are they totally out? Like everybody's gone? I mean, they got to bring them all back, or what?
I'm sorry.
The base is it just vacant, or are there people still there?
Oh no, I think there's still some people. The naval base at Tartus. I'm sure there are still some Russians there, but a lot of the equipment has been moved. A lot of the stuff that they had at one of the big air bases is gone. I'm sure Putin was talking to him and saying, "Look, I get that you look at us as a bunch of, you know, Christian, problematic guys, but you know, infidels. But we can supply you at a cut rate, and our stuff works. And you know, if you let me put, you know, a number of my guns for hire in your country, we can train your people up, we can get them organized, and we can make you a military that will give you the capability to at least oppose Israel when they come in and take territory on your southwestern frontier." I'm sure that phone call happened, or that was the subject of part of the phone call. And
is Putin overplaying his hand by saying that? I mean, what seems like to
why,
me like
why no. I mean, he's just it's let's make a deal time. You know, this is these guys in this world on this kind of thing. These guys are right out of your playbook.
Well,
you know,
I guess I'm stumbling toward the question here, Lou. Was it November, December? We had a couple of shows where you and I talked about you sent me this stuff around. The whole rail thing is falling apart. Their supply chain is falling apart.
Yeah.
What can he really promise this guy? I mean, what do they still have? I guess my question.
Well, that's a good question. So yesterday, one of the defense think tanks put out a number showing that the Russian defense spending has now eclipsed that of the entire EU. Which is why that 2% number is not necessarily very meaningful.
Right.
Russian defense spending has now eclipsed the entire EU. So the question now is, how long can they, because they're still selling oil, how long can they sustain this kind of pressure on their economy, pumping money directly into it? And the answer to that is, the stuff that I was reading 2 years ago said that 2025 was probably going to be a pivot point year for Russia.
Yeah, they got to be getting there. They got to be getting
there. And Tom, for all I know, that's why Trump makes this move now. They are running short of manpower. They're running short of rail capacity. Their oil refining capability is being damaged daily by drone attacks from Ukraine. This meat grinder now. They're supplementing with North Koreans.
Isn't that the wildest thing you've ever heard?
Yeah, but this, you know, I mean, good Lord, it sounds like the axis of evil, doesn't it?
You know, what does the guy get per body in North Korea? How much does he get per body?
I don't know, but my point is that these meat grinder attacks can only last so long before the Russian economy really, really tanks. And so the question now is, how long will that go? And as I said, 2025 was according to a number of analysts, was going to be the year, because they're running out of people, they're running out of fighting vehicles, armored vehicles, tanks. They're not producing nearly enough to make up for their battlefield losses. They have, and I mean, if you're Europe, and looking around, you say to yourself, okay, we should be ramping up, and this is the time to do it, because the Russians have basically depleted a significant portion of their Cold War stocks in this fighting. So we just have to see what happens. But I think from Trump's perspective, this war should be over. It should have been over years ago when this stalemate set up. I think Hegseth's comments yesterday that it's not realistic. You know, people get upset when he said it's not realistic to assume we're going to put Russia back where it was. That's not going to happen. I mean, unless NATO is prepared to invade, and because the Ukrainians can't do it, are we prepared to invade Russia or invade Ukraine?
Well, you just said it though. Can you just drain yourself down? I mean, there's a big paper here in the office of one of those guys from a think tank, an economist, and it's spectacularly done. Well, I've quoted from it before, and he was saying that the Civil War, as much as you know, Ulysses was a terrific general, and the North won some big battles.
Who funded this think tank? Just curious.
And I have the papers in here. It's a conservative one, Greg. Don't worry.
Yeah, it's all garbage as far as I'm concerned.
This is one of the most brilliant papers I've ever read, and you haven't even read it yet, and you're telling me it's garbage.
Let's see. Yes.
Okay. there's the young person. But anyway, basically said that the Confederacy, to a huge extent, lost because they lost control of their money and they ran out of dough. And they ran out of production capacity, which I think all of us sort of suspected the whole way. I mean, how long can Russia do that? How long can Syria? I mean, how long do you not feed anybody and people run around all day? I mean, where does a current Russian conscript come from? Well, I mean, if you can't run your rails, how do you feed people? I mean, I don't know how you...
And that's really the issue. I have not seen any indication or any articles that reflect Russian popular unrest with this. And again, you know, Putin has been focusing on making this, you know, Russia against the United States, because that's how they view this conflict. And so I haven't seen, you know, whether he's under some kind of political pressure. He definitely is under economic pressure. I don't know how long their economy can run. They're, you know, never. The one thing we underestimate in the West, and I've said this before, is the Russian capacity for suffering and for misery. They, as a culture, as a country, they put up with an infinite amount of stuff that here would cause people to say, "That's it. We're taken to the streets," and the Russian people will tolerate, as long as they think the government is moving in the direction they want, they will tolerate a tremendous amount of deprivation. So he can do that for a while. I just don't know. I mean, as I said, this year was supposed to be the big year, and maybe that's reflected in this discussion.
But the other side of
this, Tom, is that Ukraine is bleeding. What is bleeding white?
Oh yeah,
right now.
Yeah. Well, I would love to see. Well, no more. I mean, it would be a full-time job, maybe for 10 people, not just me, to get some modern warfare. Though, well, I mean, we've talked, and Mike has sure talked with us about you probably more, but the two of you together, you can't have, or was it Carl? Anyway, but all the guys we've on the show, you can't have smart artilleries without the software and without the chips from Taiwan. I mean, where is Russia getting all that stuff?
Well, every it seems like every one of these drones where they capture, you know, they capture the thing intact, they're finding Western parts in there. So they're getting them from some black market source that's supplying Iran, Russia, North Korea with printed circuit boards. And they're getting them from somewhere. And I imagine they've got some supply chain either going through the Netherlands, which is, you know, one of the other big facilities, or through Taiwan, where they've got, you know, some factory worker who's pulling, you know, 10, 15 printed circuit boards out, saying, "Well, these are defective," and then they get sold.
Well, just in general, and I never should have read the book Sovereign State of ITT, how trustworthy, in your mind, are these multinational corporations? I mean, do I trust Elon Musk to do what? To do everything he wants to do for himself? I'll trust him to do that. I mean, do we think that Apple, since they still have a huge thing in China, I'm not accusing the guy of anything, do we think that they're, you know, purer than somebody's wife and not letting anything that they do get in the wrong hands? I mean, how do they even stop it?
I can't answer, obviously, for all of them. I can point to certain things. For example, the fact that Google's idiotic employees in California tried to shut the company down from cooperating with DOD on artificial intelligence research. I know that a number of the workforces at some of these companies are if not anti-American, at least and it's not. It's not pro-business. It's anti-American. If not anti-American, at least profoundly distrustworthy of their own country. And so there's a potential problem there. On the other hand, you've got entities like this Palmer Luckey guy and Anduril that are jumping at the gun to help the country out and to provide more effective, cost-effective defense. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens when Musk gets into DOD. Unlike USAID and State and the Department of Education and a number of other places, there's a significant pro-reform mentality at DOD. It's not in the senior, you know, ranks of the GSs there. But it's definitely within the active duty ranks. And so I'll be interested to see what happens in there and who he gets support from as that goes in. But short answer is, you know, how trustworthy are these guys? I think confronted with what China is and confronted now with what Russia is, I think a lot of these companies are more pro-U.S. than they were, say, 25 years ago.
Are they more pro-U.S. because of morality or because we seem to be winning?
I don't know if they necessarily seem to be winning. I think they're probably more pro-U.S. because they see the alternative is much less attractive in terms of business, in terms of profitability. Does that mean there aren't guys who wouldn't sell their own mother for a good quarter of returns? No, those guys are still out there. But I think there's a at least an understanding that China is dangerously aggressive and is not a fun place to operate.
I often wonder, Lou, you know, they didn't Star Trek once in a while. They have the parallel world. I wonder if somehow or another you and I could beam off to some place and stop Hitler from invading Poland in 1939 and actually put things off another few years. Now, there's economic reasons why probably he couldn't do that because he was broke. He wanted to steal other people's money, which is really the reason for war, right? But if he would have held off a few years, how much the industrials here would have been up his ass selling him stuff? I bet a lot of people from all around the world would have been dying to sell the guy stuff.
I mean, that was part of Roosevelt's problem.
Yeah.
Was that he couldn't declare, he didn't think it was safe to declare war on Germany because of political support for Germany here in the United States.
Well, they had all kinds of people who thought that it wasn't Joe Kennedy. The idea of having one customer in Europe that I could deal with and not have all these other guys would be terrific. He didn't care about anything else.
Well, that's right. I mean, there was a lot of admiration for what Hitler had done, especially during the middle to late 30s. Because we weren't getting a lot of information about his pogroms. I mean, people knew about them, but we weren't getting any information about how awful it was. And he was turning the economy around. And people here thought, you know, that should be us. You know, the famous line, and I can't remember who said it. I don't know whether it was Lindbergh but talking about Mussolini, and what a, you know, yeah, he may be a dictator, but the trains run on time in Italy now. You know, and so there was a definite issue, and that's why, I mean, one of the happiest days in Roosevelt's wartime experience was when Germany declared war on the United States after Japan attacked us, because that took when the Japanese attacked us, we didn't declare war on Germany, we declared war on Japan. Hitler declared war on us 2 days later. That, and Winston Churchill goes, that's it, we've won.
Yeah, yeah.
Because now, you know, and it was totally unnecessary. Had Hitler not declared war on us, it would have been an issue as to how we would have managed that. The Germans took that off the table and really solved the problem.
Well, we already had the
political problem.
We already agreed on a Germany first strategy, right?
Well,
we couldn't have done that if he didn't declare war.
I mean, Roosevelt was already breaking, you know, U.S. law. And engaging in what were, frankly, illegal weapons transfers to the UK, under and Russia under Lend-Lease, you know, that was a as I understood it, the way we were doing it, was flat out improper, and we were providing all kinds of
did you ever read
support.
A Man Called Intrepid?
Yes.
One of the chapters is named Impeachable Offenses, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's right. In any event. The question about whether these companies are loyal or not, I think the choices have been rendered a lot starker for entities that are looking at us or the West versus you know, China, the China Iran Moscow Pyongyang axis.
But that's such an amazing. Well, it's all. I guess it's not much different than the Nazis and the Japanese. I mean, it's what a weirdo marriage it is. Iran being Muslim and wants to take the world over. And by the way, part of the world is Russia. So if they're ever done with us in our mind, they're going to write for Russia, right?
Well, yeah, and that was. I mean, but again, it's sort of, you know, where are your priorities? For the Iranians, the priorities are Israel and Saudi Arabia, and that's their immediate. That's their immediate issue. Now, another little problem for the Iranians are the Turks, who have basically seized on this vacuum that developed after these Israelis effectively neutered Syria and Iran. The Turks are looking at this and going, you know, we can be the Muslim power brokers now. And so
are they the same? They're not the same kind, though, are they?
No, they're not. They're not, you know, again, it's Shiite versus Sunni, and so the Turks are looking at this as saying we can now assert our presence back as it was when we were the Ottoman Empire, and they are looking at asserting their influence throughout that region in a much broader.
How do people? I mean, I know I keep going back and forth, but how do people think they can do that when they can't manage their own behind? Their inflation rate's like 9 zillion. Their money supply goes up like every day. It's almost like Weimar Republic. How the hell do you live in Turkey?
They're looking at themselves as this is our rightful place, and so the money issue sort of solves itself. They're selling weapons. You know, they've got a very active arms production facility.
Sorry to interrupt, but it has to all be barter though. Because why would anybody? How do you trade in a Turkish currency?
I don't know, but they're doing it. I suspect they are operating, you know, as a conduit for Russian oil and Russian materials. They are selling weapons as fast as they can produce them. Their drones, their rifles, their arms industry is giving them a lot of hard currency, and so
well, it must be other people's currency that they're dealing in, because the Turkish people with their own stuff is useless.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the economics. I just know that you're seeing, we've seen a rise in Turkish nationalism in terms of expanding their influence in that area. That's something that's been predicted for a while, but now with this vacuum in there, they're looking to try to occupy as much of it as they can. And, you know, this is a problem for us because they're NATO.
How did that ever happen?
We desperately needed them at the end of the Second World War. We had nuclear missiles.
It's been that long? Okay.
Yeah, we had nuclear weapons stationed there, and they.
That's what Kennedy was all pissed off about, right?
That's right. Well, Khrushchev was upset about it. So we've used Turkey. It's been very valuable. It's been. I wrote a paper when I was an undergrad at the academy, projecting a. a NATO, intra-NATO conflict between Turkey and Greece, and just said, you
well,
know,
they sort of had one, didn't they?
They sort of did, and I yeah. said, we're not, you know, if we're not defusing this, we could find two NATO allies with U.S. weapons on each side, going at each other, and you know, one of my professors who looked at it said, this is the nightmare scenario for us, and we have to work to defuse it. You know, Cyprus is still a flashpoint, and it has been since the 70s. So we'll see how that develops. That whole area is just a roiling stew of trouble.
In July 2019, the Turkish money supply was 2,000 or something. I don't know if it's a million or whatever the hell it is. 2,000. That was no. This is July 2019. In September of 2024, it is 17,000. So in 5 years, it's gone up almost 8 times.
Yeah.
What the hell? I mean, I went back to the Confederacy is a terrific. Not only was did they pour money into the system, but the money they printed was so easy to counterfeit, it almost like doubled.
Yeah, well,
but I mean, there's no way these guys are doing world business in this currency. They must be, like you say, they must be using U.S. dollars, or they must be using gold or bartering oil or something.
I'm not qualified to speak on that. I'm just noting that their economy has shifted to a very much a armaments production type of industry, and their military is being very aggressive with respect to the rest of that region. And you know, so the question, as I said, that's a simmering stew of problems there. But you've got them trying to assert influence to the south. You've got Israel, which, you know, was almost engaged in open conflict with Turkey, you know, a few years back, because they're pro-Palestinian. And the Turks, for some reason, the Turks have adopted the Gazan cause. So the Israelis are on edge about that. The Turks themselves have been fighting a small civil war down on their southeastern border with the Kurds, and they want those guys eliminated.
Well, how many million Kurds have those guys killed over the last 1,000 years?
A lot.
Yeah, it's unreal.
They were engaged. They engaged, for God's sake, they engaged in a genocide against Armenia. Their northeastern border. They've been engaged in combat operations there to try basically to eliminate the Kurds, who we back, you know. So it's they're operating against our interests.
What have the Kurds ever done to anybody to deserve all this hatred?
They've been engaged in, you know, they wanted independence, so they started fighting, and they've kept fighting. You've got Syrian.
Do they have no written issues. Language? They still have. I thought for a long time they had no written language. The Kurds.
I don't know about that.
They must not. There must be all kinds of other languages in there. But
you know what's left there is that hodgepodge of religious craziness. It's a very diverse in the religious sense. You have a very solid Christian group there. That was frankly slaughtered by the ISIS people. You have Kurds who have an element of that in there. You've got Sunni, Shia, Muslim factions, some of which are you know, three steps to the right of the most conservative Islamic cleric you've ever heard of. You've got those tribes that are operating. You've got the Syrian government now that is trying to reestablish control across these various tribal elements. You've got the Iranians playing ball in that area. You've got God knows what happening with the Saudis, who I suspect are very active trying to secure their interests in that region. You've got the Yemenis, who have half a country, and the Houthis with the other half. So it's just a mess. And in the middle of it sits the only really functioning democracy, and that's Israel, trying to manage, you know, all these moving parts.
And Jordan just keeps getting more and more people from everybody else.
That's right. Well, and then you know, the president of the United States comes in and basically tells the Arab states, look, this whole Gaza thing, we're not going to do rinse repeat here. We're not going to put these people back in there. I want them out of there. You guys should want them out of there. That we're not going to solve this problem. They're refugees. They claim they're refugees. That means they don't belong in Gaza. So let's move them. Put them somewhere. You could take them. They can go other places where the culture's similar. And I'm going to turn Gaza into
any place but here.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, I mean the casino line is you know, hyperbole or whatever. But the idea that we the United States are not going to countenance just a rebuild of Gaza with those people still in it because they're crazy and they're
well, in a lot of people's opinion, a lot of groups of people in the world are crazy and wouldn't we all be better off if they weren't there. But if you take it much further than that, it gets a little dangerous.
Well, but you know, from his perspective, if you say that the Gazans claim they're refugees, okay, so you don't belong there. Goodbye.
Well, first of all, I'm not so sure how much that it is our business, but I'm always just, I don't want to start traveling these places, Lou. You've been there, so has Mike. It always intrigues me that people can make these kinds of advances. I mean, I've read a little bit some of Tom Clancy's stuff regarding even like a nuclear weapon, how you can, the thing can sit there for 20 years, but the blasting cap or whatever, the electronics of it, has to constantly be maintained. How the hell, it doesn't look to me like anybody has a job over in these places. What does everybody do all day? And how does everybody feed themselves? My brother's always talking when the cost of a meal in the UN thing goes over $5 a day, that's all people have. That's when you had the Arab Spring and the last time we had huge inflation. I just can't believe from what I see from TV and what I look at the employment rates and stuff that somehow or another out of this whole mess pops a bunch of guns and stuff. I mean, having to do that is a serious factory. It's a serious job.
We were funding part of it.
I'm just saying in general. How does Turkey? They can't even manage their money supply. Of course, neither can we. It appears, but not to that extent. How do those guys become arms merchants? Who the hell's setting up the factories? It can't be them. It has to be somebody else.
Somebody's said the money's coming from somewhere, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know what Turkey, you know, I don't know what Turkey produces other than weapons and a fantastic tourist industry. But they charge. I mean, I assume they charge fees going through the Bosporus, and they've got you know, shipping and all that. But I don't know how they pay.
Well,
for
how
this.
Do they? Stupid question. What, I could see how you charge to go through the Panama Canal or the Suez Canal. Somebody made that. How do you charge somebody for going through the Bosphorus? It's a natural strait, right?
It is, but those are their national waters.
Because it's not
under international law, they have the right to control it.
So it's how many? It's not miles enough wide to where the middle of it is international.
No.
So like the. What's the Strait of Hormuz?
No, I don't know. You know, I don't know the exact arrangements. I just know that they have control over it, and I assume they make money off it.
Well, yeah,
I know they've got some arrangement with Russia that allows those warships to go through there.
But I mean, you're like the Strait of Hormuz is wider than 12 miles, right? So neither side can claim the whole thing.
You got to remember, it's got to be wider than 24 miles. 12 miles on the side.
So if it's 28 miles, the 4 miles in the middle anybody can use, allegedly.
Yeah, it's like what just happened in the Gulf of California. We just flew a reconnaissance aircraft into the Gulf of California, and it stayed in between the 12-mile limits of Mexican airspace. Okay. Now, I'm pretty sure we did that with Mexico's approval, but nevertheless, that's technically international airspace.
My suspicions are, and I mean, Lou, you've made me very suspicious. I was at the start. You've made me worse. My suspicion is the only way those guys are producing anything of any kind of weapons that are worthwhile is if somebody, us, Russia, France, somebody has got the factory there. I mean, the reason why Mexico is producing pickup trucks is because it's our factory. I think, you know, I don't know, not that the Mexicans are incapable, they are not, but it just seems like when stuff like that happens, it's always somebody else's stuff, isn't it, or somebody's technology?
I'm sorry, say again.
I'm saying if there's a prodigious military arms factory or hundreds of them in Turkey, they must be somebody else's. Somebody's bringing the technology, somebody bringing the training, those kinds of things.
I don't know. I mean, their stuff, I won't say their stuff is rudimentary. It's sophisticated, but they go buy, you know, an Anduril or General Dynamics or BAE Systems drone on the marketplace and reverse engineer its electronics and, you know, put it together. Maybe that's what they're doing.
Well, I go back, and you haven't accused me of this in a while. I go back to my Pullman roots, right? And we had a licensing agreement with Gonin in Australia for railroad cars. They would use some of our Pullman's drawings and stuff like that. But we also would send, when they started the program, we'd send a couple guys down there to show them how to get the metal stuff going. Then we sent a couple guys some purchasing and a couple guys some how to set up the line. You don't just figure this out yourself. I mean, without somebody helping you out. I mean, Australia is way more sophisticated than Turkey. I mean, they maybe could have figured it out themselves just in the drawing, but I mean, I don't see how you see people running around in Syria all of a sudden the next day there's a functioning chip plant there. I don't see that happening. But maybe I'm wrong. I could be.
I don't know. I don't know the logistics of it. I just know that the Turks are turning out highly capable long-range drones that are reasonably cheap and that are being used in a lot of places.
Well, maybe they are easy enough to take apart, buy the stuff, and get them places. Maybe they are. I mean, it could be. Anyway, are you done skiing, or what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm done skiing for now. We're headed back. You know, this case settled. I've got a bunch more on the horizon, so head down for the first part of the year.
What's the snowpack? What's the story on the water?
Average.
Just average.
It's average. We're getting some snow this weekend, but it's an average snowpack. There's no monster snowfalls like we had a couple of years ago.
But also no drought either. It's okay.
It's dry, but we're not suffering. We'll see. February's the snowiest month for Denver on the plains. We'll see what we end up with at the end of the month.
All right, bud. Take care. I'm glad you settled, and I'm glad you were on today. Otherwise, I missed my Lufix. So does everybody else. Take care of yourself.
S&P
futures
later,
down 4, NASDAQ futures up 11. Be right back, Mr. Wayne Manson.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going
on. Low and Oak Bank Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Hogg, Greg Pappas on it. Greg, would you say that first part of that song is going to be timeless?
Already is.
I mean, what was that, 1967, Buffalo Springfield? 66?
I'll check on that for you.
Yeah, I think I was in high. Wayne probably remembers. Wayne, you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you, bud?
Oh, pretty good. I mean, considering the world seems to be turning upside down right now.
Yeah, it sure does. Lou and I were just talking about that. I don't know if you were listening or not, but I'm, as you know, I'm somehow
66.
I was close. Well, that was a year off. The it was right after the Kent was that the Kent State thing? I believe that that's where that that's how that song got started, wasn't it, Wayne? What, after the four people
Kent tried? State, I believe Kent State was in 1970. So, but the anti-war movement had already pretty well gotten underway.
This was about kids in Hollywood.
Ah, okay. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, but I not that I remember much from 1966. I was probably in elementary school, but I do remember my father, who worked as a bus driver in Philadelphia, coming home one night and saying, parts of downtown Philadelphia were on fire because of the riots that were happening back in those days. So that sort of stuck in my mind, but I do remember in 1970 we had anti-war protests in my high school.
Well, yeah, nobody wanted to go.
that's right, and I think we had one day where we all walked out of class. At least, you know, us cool kids did that.
Well,
I don't think it was everybody, but
I was trying to explain one of our other producers. Ricky Ricardo Garcia. I don't know. Have you ever met him, Greg? Yet? Have you met him yet?
Yep.
He's one of the nicest guys, but he's very interested. He's from Guatemala, I think. Very, very interested in American history and so forth. And I was trying to explain to him, how do you even explain to young people, anybody really, how bitter the Vietnam thing was, and everybody who grew up through that still has scars from parents not hating them to from whatever it was. I mean, until all of us die off, Wayne, that we're here, we're never going to get over it, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole idea of a draft now seems a little odd, but I remember kids that I went to high school with got their draft notice. In my case, I got ahead of the game by joining Navy ROTC in college. So I went from 1A to 1. I don't know, the new designator was 1H or something like that. But I didn't have to worry because I was already committed to go in after I graduated from college.
Well, I was the first year, I believe, under, must have been Tricky Dad. I was the year I was in, you lost your student deferment. Everybody was in the lottery, even students.
Right.
And but if you were drafted, you weren't going to go to Vietnam. That was my year. And so I ended up with number, you know, 3 something something. So they only went up to like 180. So I didn't get drafted. But if I did, I know two of my buddies did, and one of them drove a truck in Europe for 2 years, and the other one was a tank mechanic in Alaska for 2 years, of all things. So they did stuff other than Nam. So
right,
that was my year. If you think that people paid attention to the news, if the next month you might be, you know, in a jungle being shot at, you paid attention to the news, right?
Oh, sure. And I remember when they televised the lottery on TV, and I don't know if you remember, there was one guy who was more unpopular than Lyndon Johnson in that whole episode. And I remember, how could a guy that owns a chocolate company be so despised? You remember Lewis Hershey?
Yeah.
But no relation to the Hershey chocolate. But, you know, when you're a kid, you kind of think, oh, that's a bad Hershey right there, you know.
Well, Robert McNamara was, you know, how despised was he? I mean, God.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, well, he saw the light later on, but it was a little too late for tens of thousands of U.S. Killed and MIAs.
Well, then they went to the body count and all the other stuff. I somewhere in here, I just cleaned up and I can't find it, but I it's got to be someplace. It's somebody, I don't know how you even do this, Wayne, but somebody did an actuarial study. Now, he must have had some kind of sample or something. And this is when we were first starting the show, so it had to be 2010 or something. Somehow a guy did a actuarial study on people who just went to Vietnam, be it contractors, be it whatever it was. They weren't even, like, in the fighting. that 300,000 people were dead, you know, however many 40 years later, more than should have been actuarially, whether it was the drugs, whether it was Agent Orange, whether whatever it was,
yeah,
that it was just a really an awful place to be, even if you weren't getting shot at. I mean, anyway, but if anybody goes to Washington and you go to the memorials, the Korean Memorial's pretty special, World War II Memorial, I don't know who the hell did that. Doesn't give you any kind of heart tug. The Vietnam, you walk through there, and I'm not a extraterrestrial superstition kind of guy. I challenge anybody to walk through that thing slowly and not have the hair pop up on the back of your neck. And there's people still bawling at the wall. It's unreal. Yeah. It never ends.
And then the people leave little gifts, whether it's family or the guys that served with those guys that got out of there. They leave these little sort of tokens at the wall. That really is a heartbreaker.
We were really at a massive. I mean, it was a challenge because every family was essentially a World War II vet and a kid who didn't want to go to Vietnam. You can imagine every single household was like that. I mean, mine was different. My uncle died in Germany in the war. My dad was in the South Pacific, came back with a light-skinned Irish dude, came back with a melanoma that they claimed they took off at little Company Mary Hospital, but they must not have retested it like they do now. And of course, he ended up with brain cancer in the same spot and dies in 1956. And the family pretty much gave, right? So my mom was mom said, this Vietnam thing, near the end, she goes, you know, if there's a war and our country's, you know, whatever, in trouble, you're going. I said, but this thing, she goes, I don't know what this is. Years later, she says, we would have discussed you going to Canada. I wouldn't want you dying over there. It wasn't like World War II, where we were fighting for something.
Right, the domino theory. They had everybody believe that if Vietnam fell, that there goes Thailand, Australia, and they'd be rowing ashore in San Francisco at any time. You know, and people actually believed that.
I got a quick story before we start talking about today's world. But lady who lived up. Well, anyway, people who live upstairs from me. Lady's one of these real nice, real bright. She's a packaging engineer of all things, where knows how to put together these huge machines that stamp out like McDonald's cups and the little things if you go in like your to-go cup, to-go thing when you go to a restaurant and don't finish your dinner. They make all that stuff. It's a fascinating engineering anyway, but she's really bright at it and does a really good job. And she's telling me one of her first jobs was at Walmart or someplace. And Walmart hires a lot of different kinds of people. Actually, they're very good at hiring people that, you know, maybe couldn't work anywhere else, however politically you can say that. So she says there's this guy there that doesn't want to talk to anybody. Not mean or anything, does what you tell him, he just doesn't want any part of anybody, sits by himself. Well, she, of course, is going to make sure the guy comes out of his shell. So at lunch, she goes, sits next to the guy. He's not real happy, but after like 3-4 days, he starts talking to her. Well, it turns out in Vietnam, he was a guy that you sent him into the field after everybody got shot up, and he would try and put the parts together mentally to how many bodies were there. He did the body count.
Yeah.
Out there like by himself. Well, they say there's 2 feet, there's a couple arms over there. Well, I will count that as one. That's what the guy's job was.
Right.
No wonder the dude was messed up. How do you ever come back from that?
Yeah, I served with the Navy corpsman who was in Vietnam, and I know it's PTSD is what they had, and he would sometimes just start staring out in the blank space. And then one time he told me something that really, I felt like writing a guy up. He says, you know, I served with a lot of lieutenants like you, and I used to have to put their brains back into their skulls after they got shot. You know, this went on, you know, but I thought, well, darn, I'm the way I look at it, geez, he's been through it, he's messed up, but man, I'm lucky.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's you don't even realize what some of the idea was that everybody come back from World War II, everybody was cool. There was none of that stuff, which is all BS. That's why you had VFW houses and things like that where these guys could get together away from other people. Right? I mean...
Yeah, they medicated themselves with booze and cigarettes. And they paid an awful price. Like my uncle was with the Army Rangers, was dropped behind the lines on D-Day. And, he died of lung cancer because he was a chain smoker and a drinker. So...
We're talking to Lou. I don't know, this is maybe a little off your wavelength, but it's always interesting the conversation with Lou, because my whole background is economics, and I always think through ways of money, because money somehow has to make it everywhere. This stuff doesn't work. And, you know, he was talking about the Syrians and Middle East and all these different factions and so forth. And we came to the subject of Turkey and how they're a big arms manufacturer. And my question is, my suspicion is, since they can't seem to control their currencies at all, and their inflation rate is like down to 80% or something, they must not be able to do any business in their own currency. So everything has to be either gold or oil or dollar or something. And how you get your own people to do anything with that kind of inflation? It's almost like the Weimar Republic. I refuse to believe that multinationals or other companies from other places aren't actually helping them out with this, quote, production of drones and everything you seem to be doing. And who are these people? Are they American? Are they Russian? Are they Chinese? Are they all the above? I mean, do you have any idea who's
basically taken dictatorial powers, who's the president of Turkey, sees himself as a sort of a bridge between the West. Now, Turkey is in NATO, but Erdogan is now trying to join the BRICS nations, and he's involved in this pan-Turanism. In other words, Erdogan wants to reclaim all the lost lands that the Turkic nation used to have, and that goes right into where the Uyghurs are in China. They're Muslims. So he's looking at this whole area, largely was the Soviet Union, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan.
Well, Turkey owned everything.
Them, they're the lost territories of the great Turkic Empire.
Well, wasn't the story when those guys started invading Europe? Was it one of the Khans? If you read something, a lot of people read something intelligent, but. One of the things, one of the most historical facts that changed the world the most, wasn't one of the kinds, was it Kubler or the Kid or somebody, they were rushing on Europe, had no real anybody in their way, and he got called back for his father's funeral or something like that, so he essentially stopped the advance and went back, and then never came back and kept going? I mean, the Ottoman Empire was massive.
That may have been Hulagu Khan, who was a descendant of Genghis Khan. Now, Erdogan considers Genghis Khan as these are all the Turkic peoples. But Hulagu Khan, he raided and looted Baghdad. And the one thing that kind of changed history is his mother converted to Christianity, and so did his wife. And my God, did that change things around quite a bit?
How the hell did they do that? How did some priests make it into that spot?
Yeah, you got to wonder. I mean, that guy had had some large anatomy on him to do that. But yeah, that was one of the watershed moments. They could have gone right into taking all of Western Europe, but they didn't.
Well, I mean, how does, you know, if you look back at history, I mean, the people who could make a real legal bitch is the Spain. Spain could get the Louisiana Purchase back, right? This wasn't part of the deal when they sold it to France. If they ever sold it, they got it back or something.
We're talking about, you know, changing maps around. There's quite a few maps that could be changed. I mean, the Mexican president, she said, hey, if you're going to rename the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America, we're we're going to call the southwestern part of the United States the states of Mexico, which is an Aztec word for which they used long before there was a USA.
Well, we've gone through what's going through in Washington right now. I mean, every once in a while, I mean, you get a democracy that can get a little bit bloated, and all of a sudden there's always this ramp for efficiency versus government, and you've been there a long time. I mean, governments generally are designed. I just actually wrote a big article about this yesterday. Government, the people who sat down on the Constitution, some of them were crooks, some of them knew other crooks. They knew the depths and good parts of human personality, shall we say. It was an interesting group of people, and they put together a document that pretty much addressed the good parts in humanity and the bad parts, with the checks and balances and those kinds of things. And the thing that spit out the end was kind of clunky, designed to be slow, designed to not have anybody run roughshod over anybody else, which is slow, right? And now we have this situation where we've got guys that are, quote, businessmen, are going to rip it all apart and design it efficiently. Well, the same thing happened in the Kennedy administration, really, with the whiz kids, right? And what was McNamara, chairman of Ford or something?
Yeah.
The same thing happened, really, in World War II. The unsung hero on our side, other than maybe George Marshall, was the guy who he was the chairman of GM, wasn't he? That Roosevelt hired. Wasn't he in charge of just about all the procurement and designing the factories and I mean,
there was a lot of that. But we also had a senator who was put in charge of a super committee to make sure nobody did any war profiteering, and he was very effective at that. And he had a group of auditors working for him. Got a senator named Harry Truman.
Yeah. I mean, I don't... some of the stuff that is going on with this Doge and stuff, I don't think anybody, especially somebody who's been around numbers his whole life, doesn't think that every once in a while, maybe every 5 years, I mean, hell, we get audited by FINRA every 4 years, and we're a brokerage firm. But they don't audit us to see if we're making money. They audit us to see if we're doing things right. To have something like that in place, I think we sort of necessarily do, and actually we probably do have it in place. Whether they're doing their job or not, it's another issue.
Yeah.
But for us to throw out the entire thing and all of a sudden say, well, we need all these new guys to come in, and all of a sudden we give them all this power from someplace, and now we think that they are pure. I mean, how do we ever get a president who yesterday was named the head of the what's the fine arts thing in Washington?
Kennedy Center.
Yeah, how the hell is, since when is a president not a full time job? I mean,
Well, the thing about what Musk is doing is, we've had all these people, other administrations have brought in, but none of them were 19 years old. None of them had been fired by their previous companies for leaking internal corporate secrets. We've got all that with these Musk people, and none of them were the richest guy in the world, which we have with Musk. And that whatever that was the other day, where Musk is standing there with his kid, and his kid is actually used foul language at one point to Trump, was sitting there like the feeble elderly man he is, saying, the kid's saying, you don't belong there. You got to leave. Of course, everyone says the kid's not that. I mean, he's a young kid. He's only repeating what he heard from his father. and it was just bizarre. And then the way Musk is dressed with this stupid hat on. People can either say they like Ronald Reagan or they weren't so hot on him. I'm ambivalent on the guy, but you know, he would not enter that Oval Office without putting on a jacket.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, he was a big protocol guy.
Oh, absolutely. To watch that, I used to go to Washington you know, periodically just to, you know, get a sense for what was going on up there. I don't want to go there anymore because, to me, it's not the place I covered for 35 years, covering Congress and the Pentagon and the State Department and everything else, and quite a lot of bars where I'd meet my sources.
Yeah, well, it's...
To be honest.
Well, I mean, there's a bitterness to this whole thing that, again, I don't have a... If I was, you know, if somebody ever dropped me in the Oval Office, one of the big things on my agenda would be government efficiency. I think we have gotten duplicative. We have gotten, you know, we have 245 agencies. If I was a guy and had 40 years to do it, could I knock that down to 210 and not really lose anything? Probably. You know, or maybe even 190? Probably. I mean, Mike comes on all the time and talks, well, you're in the area. He says, you got the Naval Intelligence, Army Intelligence, the CIA, the FBI. I mean, there's how many intelligence agencies are there? And the episode
18 at last count.
Yeah, and I'm saying, so, you know, could I get a committee of Lou Michaels, Wayne Madsen, Mike Murphy, and put them on there and say, guys, take a year without being vindictive toward anybody who's there. Can we figure out a way to get this to 14? I don't think there'd be any disagreement in the room, would you? I mean, I don't.
Well, we actually had that with the inspectors general, and that's actually their job. Work in some cases, working hand in glove with the oversight committees in the Senate and the House, and the OMB, Office of Management and Budget, had a huge area of responsibility on government efficiency, and the Congressional Research Service would periodically or upon request do studies to see can we make eliminate the redundancy where we find it. But we've had that process in place. Now, obviously, anything can be improved upon, but when you've got 19-year-old kids who were fired from previous jobs for leaking secrets, internal confidential material to competitors, And now you got these same people rifling through databases that have highly classified information. I think that's beyond impeachable. And all these guys and women on TV that are saying, "Oh, we're approaching a constitutional crisis." Watergate was a constitutional crisis. This is way beyond that.
What is it? You know, you've been around a while, so I mean, what I keep fishing for on the show is there's obviously people on all sides of this. Some people just want efficiency, and they don't. But also the mentality is everybody who works in government shows up and doesn't do anything and is a schlump. Well, I don't believe that. I mean, what if it was your son or daughter went out there, gets a job? Most people go to work and try and do what they're supposed to do all day long. I mean, maybe that's all changed. You know, in my business, we still do because we're managing money for people every day. So maybe other people show up and don't do anything. I don't see how you do that. But how did, I guess, here's a question maybe you can't answer, maybe you can. You mentioned Harry Truman. I've mentioned that before because he's in George Marshall's book. And a lot of the other generals were totally pissed that they had to go answer to Truman, basically, on procurement issues and stuff. And Marshall said, guys, we're fighting for a democracy. The democracy means that they are in charge of us, not the other way around. And so right. he would always make his generals essentially go see Truman. But how did Truman get the power to do that and now and actually do it versus, and I think young people, everybody's pretty accurate right now, somehow or another, Congress is, for lack of a better term, is abdicated. Why? Why is it the guy who's ahead of the committees of who runs these different organizations and who puts the money out there, why aren't they doing that? Are they so busy campaigning? Are they making money for themselves? How is it Harry Truman found the time and the current, whoever that job is right now, doesn't seem to do anything, or that I know of?
Well, Harry Truman was an Army captain in World War I, so he wasn't a novice at, you know, when dealing with the military. And this is why, you know, he felt very comfortable in firing Douglas MacArthur, because, you know, hey, look, yeah, I was in the Army too, but Truman also came from a very conservative state. He had been known as a conservative Democrat from Missouri. He had been a small-time judge at one point in time, but it was his plain spokenness. I think that he didn't put up with a lot of, BS. And I think that's why he was successful, because he got right into, telling these people, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this. We're not going to have people profit off the war. And he was
What was it? What was his? Was he chairman of the Armed Services Committee, or what was he?
No, I forget what job. Roosevelt has essentially put him in charge of this war, anti-war profiteering commission.
Okay.
And they had the power to make arrests, and they used it on a few occasions.
No, but right now, I mean, somehow the but Roosevelt worked through Congress. Now nobody wants to.
Everything was done through Congress. It wasn't that Truman was off freewheeling like Elon Musk is. These people have no clearance, and now we know that Elon Musk has all these conflicts of interest. The State Department buying, I don't know how many millions of dollars worth of armored cyber trucks. Those things fall apart. I mean, I don't know how you can armor something that's like a tinker toy.
Okay. What do you say we go to break here? We didn't do the first one. SP Futures up 250. NASDAQ Futures up 43. What are we getting these? When we come back, we're going to do a report on the PPE, and we'll give you what's going on in traffic, weather, sports.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. Looks like we have a PPI for is a total is 0.4 in January. Services up 0.3. Goods advanced 0.6. So the numbers are not good, but evidently they're better than people thought after yesterday's horrendous CPI number. So we actually have the S&P futures up 7, NASDAQ futures up 60. So we're probably almost as high as we were yesterday before the bad number came out. So I don't know what the story is with that. We have actually the 10-year is actually down a little bit. It was almost up a full 100 basis points yesterday. Now it's down 43. So we're at 4.59 on the 10-year. We were over 4.6. We were like 4.63. So that was a big move, and that's what caused the market to go down early yesterday morning. But then it did come right back. Around the rest of the world, we have the DAX up 380. It's 1.7%. Evidently, there's some Ukraine peace hopes. I don't know if that's legit. We'll talk about that in a minute. FTSE down 44.5. CAC around up 107, 1.3. So the FTSE's going the other way. We're in Asia. We've got Nikkei up 497. It's 1.3%. Hang Seng down 43.2%. Shanghai down 13.4. So a mixed bag over there. Bonds, like I said, these guys have the rates. That's not right. The 10-year is actually, it is. It's down 4%, 0.49%. We're down to 4.59, a 30-year minus 0.34, so it's down to 4.8. It almost made it to 4.8.5 yesterday, the 30-year. We've got oil down 83 cents to 70.54. Oil cannot get any kind of a bid here. Maybe Greg will talk about that. Brent down 90 cents, 74.28. Greg, it looked like a breakout when it got to 75. It's come right back down. Did you short it up there like you're supposed to?
I was actually on the sideline for yesterday. I'm glad I was.
Oh, wow, yeah. You went to a football game? Just saying. Yeah, like up there. Or were you at the sideline at the
Western? When Trump starts talking, I get a little nervous.
It's probably not a bad idea. Gold, up $11, $29.40. Silver unchanged, $32.78. Copper up a penny, $4.72. Foreign exchange. U.S. dollar now is, euro is continuing to rally here. It's up to 103.9, call it 104. It ducked below 103 2 weeks ago, Greg, which is, now it's come back the other way. British pound, same way, 124.7. It got down, did it get below 123? I think it did. So we've had, the dollar has come back weaker. Crypto, down $1,100, 96,063. What do you got for us? Real quick, Traffic Weather Sports, can't even talk about the Bulls. All they do is lose.
Morning, everyone. Here in Chicago, let's see. We have high of 20 today. Sunshine, brisk, very cold. Expect slippery travel, then some improvement. Tonight's going to be 6 degrees, so a lot colder tonight than right now. Phoenix, it's about 50. Today, cloudy, high of 68 tonight. 54 is the low there. Traffic, we have inbound... Inbound from Montrose is 11 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook is 26 minutes. We have Eisenhower from Wolf, 20 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 21 minutes. And the Stevenson is 24 minutes from Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan. Let's see. Bulls lose at home, and that's about all I got.
See, now, if you want to back in the archives... and found Angelica's
all they do is lose.
Bulls lose to Pistons.
Oh, the Pistons. Yeah, the Pistons got the best of the Bulls.
And I said, Angelica, they're not Pistons, they're Pistons. She had this great Ukrainian accent. She goes, what's a Piston anyway? Why would anybody name a team that? Well, it's a piston, it's a part of a car, and it's the Detroit City. Who cares? All they do is lose. That was the end of the sports report.
To the point.
To the point. I don't think I've ever seen a worse basketball team. I mean, they think this coach is good. Anyway, Wayne, let's not get off talking about basketball. What do you make of where this inflation stuff is going? And this pressure is going to be on the Federal Reserve to lower rates. And if inflation keeps kicking up like this, they're going higher, not lower. What don't these guys get?
Well, you know, it's funny that people said the Democrats lost the presidential election over the price of eggs. Well, in my view, at least where I shop, eggs have tripled in price.
Yeah.
And I realize it's because of the bird flu and stuff like that, but this Musk team has basically eliminated the ability of the CDC and the FDA to inform us about what's going on. It's almost like they're trying to destroy the country with really critical, going after the National Weather Service, NOAA. What do you think, everybody's going to get their weather report from the Weather Channel? Well, the Weather Channel gets its data from the government. I did find out, though, where eggs are rather inexpensive. We've got an Amish market. It's about a 50-minute drive, and I noticed that they had plenty of eggs there, but the eggs were what are known as blue eggs, but they look green to me. But these are heirloom eggs from heirloom egg farms, and apparently there's no bird flu, and I got a dozen of eggs for $4.35, so from the Amish guys.
Hey, don't tell my girl. Don't tell my girlfriend that she doesn't like the Amish because they have puppy mills.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true.
I've been watching the news and I look at kind of what's going on here. And you, maybe you can answer the question to me. We have economic policy. We've had monetary policy now, really, for 25 years. Milton Friedman's got to be turned over his grave by the second. We've essentially, in my opinion, have pumped up asset prices to the detriment of regular Americans, and we're continuing to do it. But the weird part is when when the COVID ended and we had to we pump, you know, 40% into the system in 18 months, and we still have a Federal Reserve Chairman that doesn't seem to know how inflation got here. Well, duh. Look at that graph, and it'll tell you how it got here. Just like the turkey money supply that I looked at 20 minutes ago. And they were kind of screwing around, lowering the growth of the money supply, and actually were dropping it down some, and they were letting some of the Fed balance sheet roll off and things like that. All of a sudden, and I don't know under whose direction, whether it was, I don't know if it was Biden's, Obama's, whoever helped, you know, whoever was in charge. You look at certainly the euro and the UK sort of as well. Last July, all of a sudden, just looking at the charts, without knowing the people, without knowing anything, anybody, if you're sitting, you know, in the fifth moon of Alpha Centauri looking at stats from here, you're going to go, what the hell happened in July? Somebody somewhere, whether it's from Davos or from Soros or whoever the hell's, everything's running the place, somebody said, we're not doing that anymore. We're going to start picking it right back up like we were before, pump the market up, which we have, pump asset prices up, which we have, baseball teams, football team, and we've been on a 5.8% growth pattern since July, both here, UK, and Europe, which this guy can get up and talk all he wants about fighting inflation. They're not fighting inflation. Worldwide, we're reinflating, we're protecting asset prices. I mean, who makes that call? I mean, Trump isn't smart enough to make it. Neither was Biden. Yeah. Who decides on a, which is, you know, most of the money in the world, to decide all of a sudden last July this is what we're going to do?
Honestly, so that we have this new Treasury Secretary Bessin, who had no problem in allowing Musk to go in a Treasury payment system, and his, along with his other 19-year-olds. He's a hedge fund guy, so I'm not sure how much he understands. I guess Jerome Powell is, you know, basically the guy that maybe calling the shots, but he's under fire now too.
I think he's a figurehead, has been, and I don't know, somebody's got the corner office by him that's calling the shots. But I don't know, it's horrible to say, but sure looks to me like he's not in charge.
No, and I think that's the case. I used to drive by the Federal Reserve, you know, a few times a week, and I'd look up there and I'd wonder what in the world is going up there. And one of the windows in one of the upper floors is called the money room. What do they do there?
Okay. What do they do in the money room? They'd probably a poker game going on. You never know.
All right.
But yeah, you do wonder when you see this stuff sort of happen. I'll bet that when you had jobs in the corporate place or in the government, stuff just happened where you wonder, where did that come from? And I remember when I ran for the board of the SIBO, this is 1992, and we ran from the outside, and one of the guys that helped me out was a guy named Larry Bloom, nice guy, I don't think he's around anymore. Larry was one of the people who was the chairman of like the facilities committee when they built the SIBO, and they wrote it in under budget, under time. They did a terrific job. It was, you know, an unbelievably nice place for what it was. Now, you know, there's no real floor anymore. But he says to me, I'll support you if you find out one thing I could never find out. He was on the board 2-3 times. And I said, what's that, Larry? And he goes, you got to tell me. He goes, you're a little bit more perceptive politically than I am. You got to tell me who really runs the place, because I can't figure it out. Been here since the day it started. And you know what? My first couple of meetings, and the people who ran they were the president and chairman, they were good guys. I mean, really good guys. Chuck Henry, God, forgot, the guy was a saint on earth, for God's sake. He did an unbelievably great job. You know, I became a real good friend of the dude. He was as honest as there could be. And yet stuff sort of happened. We'd be sitting there, and all of a sudden they'd kick the staff out of the room, and you have this big agenda in front of you, and all of a sudden they bring up something, and you go, where did that come from? And then we were pretty good friends, people on staff, and I'd go, did you guys have any idea where that came from? No, we have no idea. I mean, it's almost like when I left the building, I'd look to the side to see if there was a little elevator that went right to the chairman's office that nobody knew about. I mean, it somehow stuff just seems to happen. Like, who are these people? I mean, when I looked at that thing last July or August, I mean, I'm like going, wait a minute. Somebody somewhere, either at Davos or some damn place, Jackson Hole, wherever they all get together, decided something going to happen. Whoever that person is, we don't seem to have any idea. I mean, if you ask any, you listen to the Democrats and Republicans, listening to asking Chairman Powell questions, is there a blanket stupidity among all those people on how the money supply even works or how the money system even works?
Well, the man behind the curtain or woman behind the curtain knows. They don't come up with those questions. Those questions are either fed by lobbyists to them, or in a rare occasion, they're written by their staffers. But you very rarely do you get an original question out of those people that are asking questions. I used to be part of that process. I'd be asked, "Hey, can you supply a list of 10 questions for the senator or the representative to ask the witnesses?"
But I mean, how do those guys, especially the representatives? I don't think I have a pretty good respect of the system, Wayne. Even now, because I've met not a lot, but several people, like in small areas and so forth. There, if you're a representative, I'm not sure about Chicago, but if you're a representative from Iowa or Ohio or Indiana, because I've met a couple of these people at parties and stuff, people are not shy about walking up to them and saying, "Hey, this is screwed up," or giving them a call. I mean, the Congress, the Continental Congress designed the Constitution to where, the House is the people's house. I don't think people hold back bitching at these guys.
I'm hearing that the Republicans don't want to hear any more. They're turning their phones off because people now are worried about their Social Security, their Medicare, their Medicaid, and veterans disability, because of what Musk is up to. And the Democrats, and they're showing some of their true colors now, because a few of them are saying, "Oh, we're getting calls from irate constituents that are worried about Social Security, and they want to know what we're doing about it." And we tell them, "Well, we're not in charge." Well, that's the wrong answer, and that may cost Schumer his job in the Senate, because Chris Murphy from Connecticut is showing that he's a much more of a fighter than Schumer is, and Hakeem Jeffries, he's looking at leaving his perch, and he's got Jasmine Crockett and AOC nipping at his heels, and those people have a lot of support to replace what's seen now as a moribund leadership in both the Senate and the House for the Republicans. Or, I mean, for the Democrats and Republicans, they're facing their own crisis, because if they're turning their phones off and people don't even get an answering machine, I think they're going to suffer greatly in the next election.
When somebody can say, we've got this thing going in with Musk and his tribe of God knows who they are, if he walks in and says, "Okay, you got 500 people at work here, I think you can do it without 300, by the way, cut all these things they're doing," I'm not sure, I don't know the pecking order. I mean, on the one hand, I know that they're federal agencies, so the president is allegedly in charge, but somebody has gone through Congress, approved a program, give them money for the program, and I think that if Musk were to get together a huge list of coming out of whatever department of something something department, and say, "Look, in our opinion, this stuff is going to like the wrong people. It's doing this and that." Essentially, a real audit, and went back to Congress and said, "In our opinion, you can cut 30% of these guys' things because it's all old stuff. They're not even doing it anymore. The people are sending the checks to her, whatever it is." I don't, within the system, I can see that happening. But how does Musk just fire people and the money's still there? Where does the checks land?
I mean, first of all, he can't fire civil servants because he's doing it it's for political reasons. The other thing is, money already appropriated by Congress cannot be stopped by the president. That's against the law. On firing civil service people, like he did with USAID, and he's done with a few other places, as Consumer Fraud Protection Bureau. We had a president that sacrificed his life because he instituted civil service reforms, and a disgruntled guy who was promised a job by his campaign but didn't get it because the president got rid of the spoil system of government. He was so upset he started following the president. He pulled out a pistol and shot him in the back. It was President Garfield who was shot at what was then Union Station. You know, of course, this history seems to fall on deaf ears. Now, Theodore Roosevelt even increased the civil service protections, and that's why the Office of Personnel Management, where Musk has gone in and seized computers and everything, is named after Theodore Roosevelt. If you were going to do an actual audit, you would use accountants. But what he's bringing in are these programmers and coders. They're not trained to do anything even closely resembling an actual audit of a system. They're there to, I think, reprogram computers, siphon off as much data as Musk can get so he can achieve his next goal of becoming the world's first trillionaire.
What do you think is he's the guy I'm worried about. I mean, Trump, I think, actually has somewhere buried in there some morals regarding people. I would not worry about him shooting people or anything like that. I don't trust this Musk at all, do you?
Oh, no. Musk is, to me, and he carries his kid around, and he reminds me of Dr. Evil, and then he introduces his mini-me. This is like it's like a combination of an Austin Powers movie and a James Bond villain movie, except that Musk seems to have already taken over the United States.
Yeah, I mean, my issues with Trump are just style points. I don't think he's a bad guy. I don't think he would order somebody to get shot or anything like that. These other guys, I don't know them enough.
Musk to me is he's a megalomaniac. And people think that he's a smart guy. Look, he was born into wealth. His father in South Africa said he went to school every day in a Rolls Royce. Musk just was lucky to make a few good investments, and he's basically bought all these companies, or he's bought the personnel who run them, whether it's a SpaceX. He was tied up with Peter Thiel, with PayPal, the Boring Company, the place that, you know, he's hired all those people. But I think when it comes to him, he's not much more.
Idiot. We don't have that much time. The young people and so forth I talked to seem to have, they don't really have a problem with somebody saying everybody in Congress is useless. Congress is useless. Now, I have my issues with Congress, but yeah. Everybody in Congress is useless. Every judge, if he's an Obama judge, he's no good. If he's a Biden judge, depending on which side you're on. We can't even say Judge Madsen anymore. It's got to be Democratic-appointed Judge Madsen, you know, or Republican, which I find really, really bothers me, to be honest with you, because the whole idea that you're there for life means that once you're there, you're not supposed to be one side or the other. Now, whether you are or you aren't, you know, I guess that's up to the individual. But the total seeming disrespect and no, I mean, hell, my uncle and my dad died for this. You know, I feel totally different about the process and what sets us apart in this country. I think if the U.S., it's not how you do it. Part of my article I wrote yesterday to some of the people on the show was, everybody knows, and me probably more than anybody, because I'm more money-wise than anybody else on the show. Everybody knows that if you see a guy doing a crime, murder, whatever, what have you, and everybody knows he's guilty, it is so much more efficient to just shoot the guy right there than to house him, to try him. You can get rid of bailiffs, get rid of judges, you can get rid of courthouses. You can do all that. But now the problem comes, who will guard the guards? You know, who Who gets to make that call? You know, as I said in the article, I said, the Lone Ranger's dead, Superman's gone, Matt Dillon's not here anymore, Joe Friday retired, Gibbs just retired.
And there's no James Bond.
And there's no James Bond. There's nobody above reproach that we can, that, you know, I'm not a Bible thumper at all. But one thing I do remember, the part about, you know, he without sin cast the first stone. I have a problem turning over our moral authority, just like the people doing the Constitution, to certain people and under the guise of efficiency. It's always going to be more efficient to not be a democracy, right?
Oh, sure. I mean, remember what they said about Mussolini initially. Well, he may be a fascist, but he makes some trains run on time. All right.
But the last line of my article, Wayne, I don't know if you think I'm nuts with this, I go, the last time I checked, the most efficient places there were Germany and Japan. And guess what? We kicked both of their ass. How did we do that by being so inefficient?
That's right.
If we're so screwed up, our system, how did we manage to win?
And which empire collapsed? It was the Soviet Empire that collapsed.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm feeling old because I have faith in the system, and everybody's saying you can't use the system anymore. And okay, what's going to replace it? That's the problem to me.
As an elderly woman came up to Benjamin Franklin after they agreed to the Constitution in 1789 in Philadelphia, she said, "What kind of government did you come up with, Mr. Franklin?" He said, "A republic, if you can keep it." I'm not sure we're keeping it right now. The republic seems to be in great danger.
But is the attitude that much different? I mean, why do people think, hey, you don't need any judges? They're all screwed up. How everybody is convinced of that? And yet, instead of being real people, I mean, everybody in Washington isn't a salary grabbing schlump. I mean, you know, maybe people are. I think people are distressed enough. I'll say this about Trump. He has an amazing feel for what people are going through, and the Democrats are clueless. They have no idea that just about everybody in this country for the last 25 years has not. There's few that have done exceptionally well. The rest are behind where their parents were. They can't afford a new car, can't afford a house. Inflation is... I mean, we've got a government, Wayne, that sends out to Social Security recipients a letter that says, by the way, the inflation last year was 2.1%, so your Social Security is going up 2.1%, but guess what? The medical part that you pay back to us is going up like 4.
Yeah.
How do you send that letter out to citizens? Right. You could be the dumbest person on earth and say, wait a minute, if it's really 2.1%, shouldn't they be even?
Yeah, right.
How do we feel like we can? I understand why people are pissed off at this government. I get it, but how do they get to do that? How does a representative say you can't send that letter, you idiot?
Right. People on my street got that letter, and some of them voted for Trump, and they're saying, he lied to me. Look at this. Like, yeah, come on. You know, you get what you paid for.
I have a hunch. I hope that at some point. I actually have much more faith in Trump than I do in Musk. I think at some point, Trump might say, if he gets enough feedback, he's going to say this has got to stop.
Yeah, well, I think what may have done it for Trump is, you know, he's a he's a notorious germophile, meaning he doesn't like shaking people's hands for that reason. He has that in common with, I guess, Howard Hughes.
He's not that bad. Howard Hughes was God.
The Musk kid the other day was picking his nose, wiping his hand on the Resolute desk, and I can just imagine it. After that press gaggle was over, Trump called the people to have that desk totally sanitized.
God. Wayne, you always bring up some of the most interesting stuff. SP Futures up 10, NASDAQ Futures up 68. Glad you're still doing good. We'll have you back on one of these days soon.
Oh, yes.
And it's fun. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.